Shut up, train.
It's weird that it doesn't bother us during the episode, but we won't start on it.
It's true. It's more of a mental block than anything.
That's, yeah, these mics ain't picking up that train. Couldn't pick up D&D either.
It wasn't these mics that I was using. Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast where jealousy, turning saints into the sea, turning lovesick lullabies, choking on your alibis, but it's just the price I pay. Destiny is calling me. Open up my eager eyes, because I'm Mr. Blindside. I'm your host, Stephen Levine, and my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared is so done with me.
You just monologued the whole chorus of Mr. Brightside just to call it Mr. Blindside.
Yeah. I was going to do just half, and then when I started at the wrong part. So I was just like, well, I got to own it. Here we go.
I was wondering why you were so intently looking at your phone for like the 15 seconds straight before we recorded.
You got it.
I was like, his bits are off the cuff. What is this script he's reading?
Well, I actually wrote a long form intro to the podcast. It starts in one location and then we move to another location.
I already have respect for you. I would have so much more respect for you, like more than any human alive, if you did like a 13 minute opening bit.
I appreciate that.
Don't do it, please.
I think our listeners would be very upset. Or just turn it off. I'm not entirely sure.
That's what it would be. Yeah. We wouldn't be able to tell, because I think that would still count as a listen, but nobody would get past that part of the episode.
Jared, how's it going?
I feel so much better than when we recorded 2 days ago.
Isn't that wild?
Oh, man. That first day, today's the first day I feel like back to health. I'm still a little like fatigued, maybe because I took NyQuil again last night and saw the Hat Man. So like I'm a little tired. I did not see the Hat Man. Although the night, I don't know if I said this on the pod. I hated calling it a pod. That didn't feel right. Anyway.
We're the pod.
We're the pod, bros. The night of taking an edible and NyQuil, best damn sleep I've ever gotten in my life. I slept for like 14 hours.
You might as well have just taken 7 melatonin.
I was a little nervous that, like, what if my blood sugar gets low? Will I wake up? And it did, and the answer was yes.
Oh, good.
The answer was an alarm woke me up because of a continuous glucose monitor.
Good, good.
I didn't feel it at all. But no, the first day today of, like, not feeling sick anymore is, like, the first day after when you can, like, breathe. Like, I was never that congested, but, like, you know that feeling when your nose has been clogged and then you can finally breathe again and you can appreciate everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing feels better in life than those days.
Well, I'm glad.
How about you, Steven?
You're on the other side. I'm doing all right. I've seen you like 3 days in a row here.
I know. You actually came to D&D for once, or I guess D&D came to me.
And okay, to be fair, the last few times I was out of town, sick, and there was one other one that I was like, I either had plans or something.
There was a couple times where everyone's schedules lined up on one day and then yours lined up on the other available day. And it was like, well, Steven, if we're going to have you show up, we'd have to have four other people not show up. Yeah. So we're going to go with the other group.
Yep. And we had half of the crew in person, half remote. And it just reminds me how much I am, one, good at audio equipment, but two, audio equipment pisses me the hell off sometimes.
Audio equipment sucks.
Here's the problem, though, is I have a... I could run things through a bunch of different ways to make it work, but where we ran into issues is either, one, hearing the people on the Discord mm-hmm. server that we were talking to, or... What ended up happening is my speaker was doing a reverb situation because it was going Bluetooth to the speaker,
right?
And then the speaker was becoming the microphone, so it created like a small feedback loop.
I think you're actually mixing up a little bit. I think it was because the speaker was loud enough that it was feeding back into the microphone, so they were getting echo.
Well, no,
Or come up the first time when you were getting the actual like wah, wah, wah sound.
No, that was a different thing entirely, which I knew was happening. Yeah. That was like, I was just trying to fix it. But no, because Discord, if you're running it like on my iPad, which is what we ended up doing, it was loud enough to fill up the whole room.
Mm-hmm.
But the microphone was also on the iPad.
Yes.
So it was smart enough to filter it out.
Yes.
Sometimes, and it just depends on the speaker, it doesn't, for whatever reason, filter it out.
Yes, sorry. We're saying the same thing differently. Like, I understand what you're saying. Yes, it's not, the speaker and microphone aren't talking to each other, so the speaker is putting it out, and the microphone's like, that's audio I need to capture.
But, like, we had it all running through one system. Like, yeah, the microphone was the speaker, so by all means, that should make sense for it to work.
I didn't even realize that. I thought it was the microphone you had hung up.
Right, which was the original plan.
That's really dumb.
It was really dumb, and it was making me very angry.
I was like, I'm too sick and on too much cold medicine to do this. I mean, I was getting over being sick, but I still had the brain fog.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't have been DMing last night. It was fine. I hope you guys had a good time.
It was fun.
Was struggling.
I was cracking jokes left and right. I was on fire.
That's true. Yeah, you were the star of the show. Steven raised a zombie. They met a guy. And I will say, I want to call out Wizards of the Coast a little bit, because they don't write very good dungeons sometimes. And I thought I was better about going and adding interesting things. And there's stuff I added last night on the spot that was not in the books, because there's so many rooms in that fucking cathedral and catacombs that are just boring, that there's nothing in them. And they're just like, it's a table and chairs. I'm like, what the fuck? Why is it here then? Like, you have to give something interesting, at least lore building wise. So Wizards relies on you to fill it in. But they also have so many people like cowering and hiding that aren't necessarily relevant to the plot, which is fine.
Yep.
Except then I have to play all of them, and sometimes they have to talk to each other. But you found a man named, I don't even fucking remember his name anymore, Treverius?
Yeah, something like that.
And every other T name came out of the entire party's mouth, started by Steven, who then raised a zombie and named him Treverius.
Yeah. Just like, you know what? We keep screwing this guy's name up on purpose. Eventually, yeah, it was on purpose. The first time was an accident. And then, no, this one, I get it right. But it's the guy's actual name, just to spite him.
There was also a room in the dungeon that is like a 20 by 20, like circular room, like 20 foot by 20 foot. And I like opened up the fourth wall to the players for a minute, because I was like, listen, guys, the book here says that there's like a conference table in here, like a diplomatic like round table, and 40 chairs. The fuck there is? Absolutely not. There's nowhere to step. It's just chairs, floor to ceiling. That's it.
All chairs.
It's a fucking black box theater of chairs. Did nobody read that? Even once?
Nah.
This was printed before ChatGPT.
But yeah, that was fun. We played D&D. At work, we just had like an art tour of our... We have lots of art around the office, so people from a museum came in and like gave a tour, which was cool. But it was also the earliest drink I've ever had on a Monday.
What time was that?
It's like 3:30 p.m.
Oh, those are rookie numbers. You gotta pump those up.
This isn't college, man.
You said ever, so I was including college.
That's fair, but it was I was gonna say the probably earliest I've ever drank was my graduation day. That was a different kind of day.
I once did a 3-day darty, as we called it.
What is that?
A day party. It was here in Chicago. It was with one of our friends in the D&D group that doesn't get to play that often. And it was just like some college friends of his that were all in medical school, and we're like, hey, come out to this house in the burbs for 3 days. And we literally just woke up, drank the entire day. They had like an outdoor pool. It was a really good time.
Nice.
Except, you know, there's one or two people that get like, can't handle it and get like too drunk and then sad. And then it's like, oh, that's,
yeah,
you guys got to go somewhere else. Like go into the corner and just go do that. Go do what you're doing and come back in a couple hours.
So I forget if I said this. It was maybe I'm misremembering. It might have been the day before my college graduation, but I had a set of Pokemon badges, like the original 8 Pokemon badges.
Fucking course you did.
And I gave myself a badge every drink that I drank.
Nice.
So by the end, I had 8 badges and a nice hangover the next day.
Hell yeah.
Yay.
I remember that was, so that was back before I was managing the escape room.
Okay.
But me and him had to come back after, like, partway into day 3. And, like, we stopped drinking a few hours before that. Maybe we didn't drink it all that day because we knew we were going to have to be working and I had to drive back in. But it was an escape room with a person, like, on the clipboard and a person, like, on the chain, the zombie one, escape yeah. room. And I was the hungover zombie. Oh, no. And we couldn't even trade off. We had like 3 or 4 shows and we couldn't trade off because he had broken his collarbone actually doing that role.
Yeah, that sounds right. I did that role a few times and it's physically intense.
He was the only person I think that ever like really got hurt. He thought he had more chain than he did.
Yep, that's the problem.
And it wasn't even a lot of force, but it does not take a lot of force to break your collarbone.
No. Ouchies.
Yeah.
You know what else it doesn't take much force to do? Emails! If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/survivortbt, or on Patreon. You can send us a message on Patreon.
I love when I say one that I know, like, if you want to transition by how long we've been talking, like, there it is, Steven. Here it is, the alley-oop.
Take this gift and dunk it home. Do you watch the... You're not a basketball person.
No.
I don't watch much NBA, but the dunk contest is always kind of funny to me. But now there's this recurring star of the dunk contest, and if you were to pick him out of a lineup of people that would say, oh, this person's really good at dunking, he wouldn't be it.
Oh, really?
His name is Mac McClung. He's like 6...
That's not his real name.
That is his name.
That's someone in witness protection.
That's fair. He is like... He's short in basketball terms, so it's probably like 6'2". He's like a 6'2 white guy. Insane hops, like, does crazy things, but then he, like, fades back into obscurity for the rest of the year because...
That's the one thing he can do?
That's the one thing he can do.
Huh. Yeah, no, basketball's kind of a solved game is what I've been hearing. That it's gotten kind of boring because it's like, yeah, just shoot threes. Like, people gotten really, really good at shooting threes. So it's like, well, what do we do to make the game interesting now that it's been optimized out of being fun?
Defense. Defense is the answer.
Allow body tackling.
Allow the Minnesota team to win. Thank you very much. I don't know. No sport has solved it. I don't know when they will. Anyway, email. Carl's episode 8 email. Picture the episode. It's Amy pointing the machete at Eric.
It's so ominous.
It's threatening. I love Eric staring at the machete here. It's like, you can see him thinking, what do I say to make sure I get off this beach with my head on my shoulders?
Yeah, there's a little bit of like, she wouldn't do this, right? No? Does she know? Does she know that she's pointing this at me? Does she realize this isn't like a ruler?
Yes. Everything she knows, she does. Oh, notes. It tickles me that Jared says that strategy is being revolutionized this season, because this episode ends the stretch that people usually consider the weaker portion of the season. In fact, Micronesia at this point wasn't even super popular yet. Hmm. People were mostly lukewarm, like, eh, it's okay for an all-star season. They were also generally disappointed at Amy's return, since she wasn't the big badass feminazi people remembered her as. We're now just heading into the stretch where people remember the season. I don't know what sends you in that spiraling direction. Anything from this episode that makes it exciting?
Yeah, I mean, poor Amy, as we talked about a lot. Yeah, that's, I guess, maybe revolutionize isn't the right word if I've used that one. But people are, like, the fundamentals have been rearranged. Like, the default now is to make a move rather than to wait for something to happen that benefits you.
Mm-hmm.
And this feels like the first time that that is the default for players instead of it being something out of the norm. Like, we've heard from pretty much every one of the favorites about what they think their plan is going forward. At least something of their plan. I can't remember a season where we've heard from, like, almost everyone, here's the people I think I should go with, or here's the strategy that's going to benefit me in the next few days. Here's the next phase of the game. Like, they're talking about it like it's a game now instead of I don't know. I like this person and we'll see what happens.
Actually, that's very interesting that you say that, because continuing on with the email, I would say I don't personally think that strategy has made huge leaps this season, at least not so far. Parv's talk of phases hits me really just a combination of two strategies that we've seen before, those being A, shields, and B, making new alliances after a swap. And many of the moves we've seen so far, we've seen previous versions of, except the get rid of an ally of your rival who isn't as good in challenges strategy, aka the Mary Boot. But yeah, the strategy has without a doubt been very interesting, and without sacrificing other elements of the show, and the season is very well edited, which to me might be the most important thing of all.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is very well edited, even though I haven't talked about it in a little bit, in a few episodes, but man, they just have so much. You can tell there's so much content they could put into these episodes, and they have to stick with very specific storylines rather than just throw shit at the wall because they don't have a clear story.
We don't have time for that. We have plot lines we have to put in here. Love Natalie's line of how hot would that be while talking to Parv about a Final Four alliance with them, Alexis, and Amanda. So hot. Love James saying that neither Popeye nor Jacques Cousteau would dare get into the water at Irai. An interesting group of people. Love the producers feeding Jason the line about no one eating rats since season one, because I don't feel like he knew that himself.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good call out.
Yeah, I believe that. So, moving on to Tyler's email. Tyler's Survivor season rankings. As you probably noticed while I emailed about China ranking placements, a new website, TV Line, has added rankings for all 47 seasons up to this point. So I figured it was only fair to go back and post their rankings for the first 15 seasons up to this point. So up to this point, we have... Do you want numbers? Because they're the numbers 1 through 47.
Yeah, I guess just give me like Borneo number. Yeah.
Borneo, 3.
Borneo 3 is all... These guys are crazy.
This is pretty crazy. Borneo 3, Pearl Islands 8, Amazon 11, China 12, Palau 13, Marquesas 14, Australian Outback 18, Cook Islands 21, Panama 28, Vanuatu 31, All Stars 35, Africa 36, Guatemala 38, Fiji 40, and Thailand 47.
Thank you. Thank you for Thailand. That has a heavy nostalgia bend to it.
It does. But, like, it's Survivor, so yeah. It's hard to get away from that nostalgia bend, especially if you're in present time looking back and saying, all right, what do I want? Versus us going through and saying, all right, let's watch them all chronologically.
Yeah.
Gives a different vibe. A few notable things. You may not remember because it's been a while, but since I emailed about their rankings, it may seem like they rank Borneo and Australian Outback absurdly high.
Like, yep, okay.
That actually falls in line with how a lot of people rank those seasons. I think nostalgia is a very large factor.
Yep.
Hey, could have just kept reading the email. Also, I mentioned it at this time, but while Thailand has been unanimously ranked near the bottom, this is actually the first ranking to have it dead last.
Yeah, I know, and that scares me for some of the other seasons we have coming up.
Mm-hmm. And that's it for that email. Next email from Josh. Josh says, Eliza's a huge fan of the show. She, Suri, and Jonathan were at the Survivor 48 premiere party.
Oh, cool.
Which has already happened. That's exciting. She's also very vocal online about how 26-day Survivor is not real Survivor, which has earned her some ire from modern players.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's not real, but I'm not going to like 26 as much. I guarantee you that.
Dad, can we have Survivor?
You have Survivor at home.
Aww. The season Eliza was on The Amazing Race for was a CBS reality TV battle season. So her and a Survivor contestant from season 17 of Survivor helped represent the Survivor team.
Oh, cool.
Here's a behind-the-scenes story Eliza told about the stick. The funniest thing about the whole stick incident was what happened when I was going to get it out of the bag. When you saw it on TV, what you saw was me walking it to the cave and Jason walking down to the beach. It looked like it was happening simultaneously, but what you didn't see on TV were all the cameramen following me. The minute I started walking over to the bag, the minute they realized I was going to get my first look at the idol, there was this mass scramble as the entire camera crew came running over to me. And this was so weird because you never see that when you are playing Survivor. You never see the cameraman run. It never happens. Ever. Huh. So here I am.
Listen, there's probably a couple of times in the show's history where cameramen were suddenly running, but
that's true.
She had probably never seen it.
So here I am walking over to the bag, and practically the entire camera crew comes running down the beach after me. And when I saw them coming, I just stopped. I looked at them kind of funny, and I asked, is this for me? They yes, they nodded, but I'm just going to go to the shelter, I said. They didn't say a word. I didn't learn until later that the producers had told them to do this. Apparently, the producers had warned the camera crew that if they didn't get the footage of me going to the bag and discovering the idol for the first time, if they didn't get my reaction to seeing a stick with a face on it on film, they were all going to be fired. Every single one of them. So when I finally went over to look in the bag, they all panicked and started running after me.
Hilarious.
That's so funny.
Oh my God.
Also, apparently, Jeff fished the stick out of the fire and still has it in his collection of Survivor props.
Huh. Interesting. Just a little charred fake immunity idol. That's what you want to call it. It's not. Jason's so dumb.
As much as Jeff is like a part of this game, he is a fan of this game.
Oh, for sure.
And he takes mementos, and I think that's just so delightful.
God. What a wild. What are you thinking as Eliza when the camera's following you? Like, because you must know something's not normal about this idol then.
Yeah.
Like, you're tipped off a little bit when 7 cameramen come running after you as you're going to go get the idol.
Something's fucky.
Like, my first thought would be, well, yeah, something's fucky for sure. Like, it's either not in there or something. Because if that's a real idol and I'm going to go get it and there's 7 cameramen following me, that's going to tip off my tribe that something's going on.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'd be a little pissed off, actually.
Yeah. I don't know. Just like, producers, come on, man. A little heavy-handed on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you probably just get, like, even, I guess the running's out of the norm, but you probably just get used to, like, who fucking knows why the camera people are doing what they're doing.
It's true.
Like, we can't predict it. If I'm a contestant on the show, I'd be like, okay, yeah, whatever.
All right, sure. Okay, and then last email from Tyler. Tyler says, the immunity challenge was played in Palau. This was the Hanging on the Great challenge.
It was Palau, okay.
It was the challenge where Janu bailed first, so she had to spend the entire night on Exile Island before Exile Island was a thing.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Yep, and I knew it too when I was like saying, oh, I think this is the first time we saw it. And I'm like, wait, hold on. Every single challenge is... Maybe not every single challenge, but most of these challenges are from other seasons.
I'm going to say, certainly not all of them.
They're rehashed.
Yeah.
Or at least revitalized.
Well, yeah, refined, really. Like, a lot of them are better than the first time we've seen them.
Yeah.
It is funny, though. They probably put this in the exact same fucking spot.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
As Palau.
That would make sense to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amy got married on May 1st, 2016. Eliza wrote reviews for Survivor for Reality Nation until Survivor Philippines, season 25.
Hmm.
In April 2016, she appeared on People Now, where she and another Survivor contestant interviewed the Survivor contestant that had been eliminated that week.
Hmm.
In the spring of 2017, she appeared on 2 episodes of the Penn Fan Forum, which, as I've mentioned before, was a weekly internet talk show hosted by the same person that she now co-interviewed with on People Now, who was a contestant on the current season Survivor Game Changers. Interesting.
I can't wait to see Sam Reich on Survivor.
Very different. On the second episode she appeared on, Brian from Guatemala was the other guest. Her, oh yeah, this is a new thought. Her season, The Amazing Race, was season 31 in the summer of 2018, which was the Reality Showdown edition, which we talked about, that featured teams from Amazing Race, Survivor, and Big Brother, and her partner was...
Wait, feels kind of fucked up to bring in Amazing Race contestants to do The Amazing Race against contestants who have not played The Amazing Race.
It does a little, yeah. Her partner was a Survivor contestant who Jared will meet soon, however, they will also play a second season of Survivor first. So, it'll still be a while before I can reveal who it is.
Cool.
Can't wait for the next episode. Thanks, everybody. That's all good stuff. I feel like I had another thing that I had to say about Eliza that I said I was going to bring back up, and then I didn't. And I thought about it while I was editing the episode, and I was like, I'll say it later. But I'll look it up. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on April 17th of 2008. A very calm week between episodes, at least in the terms of the news. So the only thing that I could find was an event of interest. Start of papal journey of Pope Benedict the whatever, 26th, I think. Nope. God, I'm so bad at these. 16th. Pope Benedict the 16th of to the United States. I guess I don't know what a papal journey is besides the fact that it sounds like a boss run in Dark Souls. But he did that across the United States. The number one song is still Touch My Body.
Touch My Body.
And the top five movies are Leatherheads, Nim's Island, Prom Night, 21, and the one we're going to talk about, Steven, Street Kings. Are you familiar with Street Kings?
Not even slightly.
Tom Ludlow, Keanu Reeves, a veteran member of the LAPD, is still mourning the loss of his wife and trying to navigate through a world that does not make much sense anymore. When evidence implicates him in the death of a fellow officer, Ludlow begins to question the loyalties of everyone around him. What do you think this rate on Rotten Tomatoes, Steven?
This could be anything. I have no idea. Keanu Reeves, at this point, I think we've come off of like the Matrix fame, and
yeah, we're like 6 years past that at least.
Yeah, and I think people are like souring on Keanu Reeves before he comes back around. So I'm gonna go with a critic score of 35 and an audience score of 42.
God damn, you are so right on with that critic score. Critic score 37.
Damn.
2% off is amazing. Audience is a little higher, but not much. 58.
Okay.
It's not a good movie. The consensus is Street Kings contains formulaic violence, but no shred of intelligence. Which, I mean, isn't that kind of the fun part of John Wick?
Yeah, I guess.
So, I guess they just leaned into the dumb.
You just got to do it right.
Yeah, it has to be intentionally kind of dumb, not you tried to make something that's I'm 14 and this is deep.
Well, that's the fun part, I guess.
No, it's not.
A what?
It's the worst type of media.
I like making movies for people who can't afford to buy movies.
Anyway, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I realized now why I didn't say anything, because it was Eliza talking about her face when she when Ozzy got blindsided here.
Oh yeah,
it's good.
Pretty good. Her reaction's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. All right. Anything else, Jared?
No, not before the episode.
Cool. Then let's get into the episode. Episode 10. I promise.
So to start at the end, a very good place to start. Was I ripped to the gills on Dayquil, or was this blindside really understated?
What do you mean by understated?
It sort of, I mean, like, don't get me wrong, like Suri talks about it, Parv talks about it, but the groundwork for this blindside is not laid in this episode. It is laid in like so many episodes before this, and then it just kind of happens. Like, there's not a lot of pomp and circumstance around it.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of happens.
Yeah, they're kind of talking about this and thinking, like, when is the best time to do this, and who needs to be involved if we're going to do this?
It's now.
Yeah.
And it's just done.
And they really can't make too much of a fuss about it, because if things get any sort of whiff that Ozzy, like, oh, I might be in danger, he's going to play that idol.
Like, just comparing this episode to the James Boot, in China, uh-huh. Like, there was a lot of buildup before the vote. This does not feel like there's a lot of buildup, and I don't hate it. I actually think that it works, like, the shock factor of it works better with that lack of buildup.
Yeah.
But we'll get there.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get there. We got a lot to talk about in this episode. So we get back to camp after the vote, and Parv says, Jason, what just happened?
Yeah, I forgot that Jason now looks like a fucking moron to everyone.
Correct.
Because, like, Eliza doesn't get to have those conversations, but Jason's still here.
Uh-huh. Because in reality, it's Jason's move. Even though Eliza's the one that goes home, he's the one that supplied the stick. Yeah. He's the one that was...
And she never even went to exile, so it's not like they can be like... He can be like, Eliza found it.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope, this is his move, and he has to own it.
Oh, I know it's a very small thing, but in the last time on, fucking dorky-ass moon wipe transition had me laughing.
I love it. Yeah, so Jason, he admits, yeah, that was my only shot in the game. I had to make something happen, so here we go. And Ciri kind of dogs on Eliza for a bit.
I found that interesting that she's like, she walked up there like, oh, it's this, like, I got this idol. And I'm like, I guess Ciri didn't see all of the lead up to it where she was like, this isn't an idol. And why would Eliza, I kind of thought about what I said before of like the, I don't know if this is an idol, whatever, play it with confidence. Who cares? Like, make them sweat for a second.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun to be like, I've got one.
Like, it's all about perspective too. Like, we know that she has doubts and Ciri doesn't.
We know that she knows that it's not an idol. Yeah. It's not doubts at that point.
That's a good point. But then it kind of gets Ciri's mind thinking, like, if that was real, Ozzy would be gone, the idol would be played, and that might not be such a bad thing.
And in some ways, Eliza is partially the architect of the blind side this episode.
Partially.
And now, mind you, this is, like, the fourth time that Ciri's gone, but what if we got rid of Ozzy?
Uh-huh.
But what if we got rid of Ozzy?
She wants it so bad.
She's wanted it for the entire time they were on Moloch all together post-tribe swap.
She has the restraint to wait until she can do it right.
That's what makes her a great Survivor player.
And Jason reacts a little here. Like, Ozzy fooled me. I felt kind of silly. Now I have to beat Ozzy in the immunity challenge. And I have to continue to do that forever.
I have to continue to be a godlike competitor.
Yeah, Ozzy isn't the only godlike competitor who can play this game.
God, I hate him so much.
That's a hell of a statement there, my friend. Has anyone ever compared him to... If we were to make the Mount Rushmore of Survivor, he would not be anywhere near that mountain.
The only person farther from the mountain than him is Chet. Like, I think the only person on this season that is less likely to win on a replay of the game is Chet, and I include Mary in that.
No, I think Mary has a way better chance second time around.
Jason sucks so much. Welcome to the Jason sucks arc of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, because he's gotten any screen time.
Anyway, then we jump into a reward challenge.
I'm sorry, I'm going to dog on Jason for one more second.
Go, continue.
Has he been on the winning side of a single vote? I don't think so. Because Joel went with the older people and Jason stuck with Mikey B.
Mikey B.
And Mikey B didn't win a single vote. Yeah. And then Arai didn't go to tribal.
You might be right. I don't think he got a single one right.
He certainly lost the last vote. I guess he's on the right side of the vote in this episode.
That is true. Okay.
Blindsiding Ozzy is the first time this season where we are at putting the second member on the jury that Jason has been on the right side of a vote. That is legendarily bad.
That's pretty wild to think about. Oof.
Oh my God. He could make it to like the final six just because nobody cares.
Okay. Anyway, now reward challenge. We are swimming to a net tunnel. And then you have to climb through a net tunnel to memorize symbols on a board. You then have to race back and place those symbols on a board. If you are incorrect, someone has to go back out and recheck. So you can't just keep switching things around.
Yeah. And they've done that version before, but they added fake pieces this time.
Yes.
Which I thought was really clever.
It's very smart. Especially with the kind of pieces that they used.
Yeah.
Because it's very obvious that what goes in each row. So if you throw in fake pieces that are similar but not quite right, gives you a little more to think about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's refined, like we talked about before. Refining old challenges.
Yeah.
So now refine the SOS challenge, cowards. Please don't.
No, please keep it away. The reward for this, they get to fly to Yap, which is an island.
It's so funny that we mentioned Yappies last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time just thinking, hey, Steven, I went to Yap and everyone there knew you.
Nice. They then get a feast and a dance, and they get to spend the night in a traditional bai, which is a hut reserved for chiefs.
Cool.
Which is cool. And then we find out that it's split. It's teams of two, like two teams, and we're gonna pick one person for each team to be the captains, and then we'll do a schoolyard pick'em, and one person's gonna be left over.
Yeah, Drew rocks to see who would be the captains.
Yeah, sent straight to exile.
I never like when you exclude somebody.
Never?
I never like it. Well, I can understand its value, but I don't think it outweighs the benefits of everyone getting to play.
What would they have to do to make that interesting to you?
God. Give them immunity at the next... Mm. Give them individual immunity for the next tribal council.
Okay.
So it's your strategic decision instead of just... Like this one, it's Cerise the least athletic. And that's kind of what happened to Denise last season too. And I guess in Denise's case, it also is like, oh, I'm on the bottom. But it's like, you're just not that good at the challenges. And like, we all are on the same page that you're not that good at the challenges. So there's not, it doesn't stir up anything really.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's an incentive to not be picked, that's a little more interesting.
There is one thing that I like that they do that I can't talk about for a long time that makes it kind of interesting to be on the sit-out bench.
Yeah, or like some type of advantage in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess I know that because I've seen 41 and 42, like, there's, I know there's things like idol nullifiers, which is fucking crazy. I think at least I remember that. And like hints and stuff, like, and maybe another hint towards an immunity idol, or I don't know, like, whatever advantages they want to come up with, though I'm sure they're going to come up with advantages that I just fucking hate.
Oh, yeah, there will be some.
Like the one this podcast is named after.
What? No. Anyway. The two captains are Jason and Natalie. Do you think if Jason was not picked as a captain, do you think he would be on a team?
Yes, because he is unfortunately good at the challenges.
Okay.
Like, he's the second best person at this course that isn't Aussie.
It's kind of wild. I thought that this was going to be a bigger sweep than what it was.
I did too.
Because the two tribes, or two teams, not tribes, are Jason, Aussie, Eric, and Amanda. Three of the, like...
Well, this is just Malakal and Arai again. Like, Suri sits out.
Oh.
But they just go back to their two tribes. And I think...
Other than Jason.
Other than Jason, yeah. Which he couldn't have been on Arai on the like on that breakdown because him and Natalie were the captains. Like, he just picks Malakal, and
I guess, yeah,
Natalie just picks Arai.
Alexis was kind of left over, and she got put with the Malakal people.
Oh, yeah. She took Suri's spot.
So not quite, but... I get it. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised that James got picked first because I thought it was going to be more swimming heavy. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that the net was like a foot in the water, right. Like that you didn't have to swim. You just had to like jump over it. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and for Natalie to pick James first, I was like, that seems odd. Like,
yeah.
Eh, whatever. So Suri goes to exile. And then we play the game, and it's fascinating to me. What would your strategy be for this game?
I think that you start with the bottom row. You try to do it in three. You start with the bottom row, and then the next person does the middle and spot checks the bottom, and then the third person does the top piece and spot checks the rest.
Okay.
That's, I mean, maybe you can try to do it in two if you want to try to get... there was four rungs, so the third person would get the top piece and then the next two. So it'll be like 5-3-2-1 or whatever the breakdown of those pieces are.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
I would try to do it in one.
Really?
Yeah. Judging on how many extra pieces there were, and there were extra pieces.
There was a good amount.
Was there?
Yeah.
It didn't look like it was enough to make me hesitate.
Mm.
Like, I would want to take more time than what they were taking, but like, give it a go. Because really, you'd only have to memorize 5-4-3-2-1, 15 pieces?
Yeah, I thought there's only four rows, so it might even be less.
Oh, okay.
But either way, that is risky because you're putting the entire failure of your team or success of your team on your shoulders.
100%. But then you also have an earlier chance to like give it a go.
True.
But then if you don't know what you messed up, then it does open it up to a lot of problems. I see the risk in it. But that's what I would do.
Because even if it works, let's say you get it in one, you've now put threat on yourself.
That is true. Oh, shit. I didn't think about that.
You're fucked either way.
Well, all right, maybe I don't do that then. Good point.
We need to get you on Survivor and then let me, like, put an earbud in your ear for me to be like, but Steven.
But wait. Yeah, so this is kind of hard to talk about. Like, people go out, they grab things. Everyone does, like, one row at a time. James only places one tile. I had to make that a note.
Yeah, which I couldn't tell if that was, if his job was spot checking. Hey, this person's going to go do this long bit. You go and make sure theirs is correct. And then just grab the top piece mm-hmm. and get out as quickly as possible.
But that seemed like the weakness and what they...
It did.
Kind of... They didn't lose by much, but they lost it.
And they were wrong.
Yeah, they were wrong.
So if that was his job, he didn't do a very good job of it.
Yeah. Alexis is the one who calls it, but it's not quite right. And the orange team of Jason, Ozzy, Amanda, Eric get it right.
I don't remember seeing Jeff look at, like, a laminated, like, key to a puzzle before.
He does do it. It's, I don't know about laminated. It's usually a card, but this is a lot.
Yeah,
that
fair.
He's looking at.
He's usually pretty good at hiding it. I'll give him credit.
Yeah.
Because this one, it's just, like, it's right there. And I'm like, wow, that sticks out to me. I don't remember seeing one in his hand before, even though, like, I know it's somewhere for him mm-hmm. to reference. But he's usually a magician.
He usually palms it so that you can't see the card.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, he holds it low enough that that's not the focus of your eye.
Well, there have been previous seasons where he did not have a key in front of him and he called a challenge wrong, so I can see why he would want that.
That would never happen. We wouldn't have to send people away and then bring them back.
There was an entire settlement for Africa because he got a trivia question wrong.
Yeah. I don't know if he got it wrong or if
whoever got it wrong.
The producers got it wrong. Either way, yeah, get your questions right.
No wonder trivia never comes back after that. At least, well, there's some times after that, but it's not used that often. I say as they used it in China. I realize as the words leave my mouth.
Yeah, it comes back.
But it's about, like, one specific event, not just, hey, all the things that happened over the course of the season.
Right. So, yeah, Jason and the crew get to go take a trip. Jason's sitting in the co-pilot seat, which I went, there's no co-pilot?
Why are you allowed to sit in the co-pilot seat, Jason?
That's a good question.
Why is Jason the narrator of the start of this trip? I don't want to hear from him.
Well, we're thinking that we're getting rid of him soon, so we got to get as much as we can.
No, we don't.
We then go on the first and last binge drinking, binge tobaccoing.
Binge nuttin'.
Binge nuttin' of Eric. He's never heard of yet, but most people I know have never heard of Hockney, where I grew up, so I can relate.
It's a kind of a wholesome approach
from
Eric. It is interesting that, like, Eric's point of view is the only one that we really get, or people talking about Eric, that the show has just decided to kind of make Eric this, like, puppy dog.
Yeah. He's so sweet. He's having such a great time. He says it was so, like, out of time. I expected a dinosaur to show up.
And I'll put a little carve out here before. We've talked about it. If you're newer to the show and you haven't listened to, like, old seasons, the cultural appropriation side of this is always a little weird for me, that we're just going into these people's village or culture, or, like, maybe it's not even, like, we don't know how these people actually live day to day. I don't trust the show to do a good representation, or whether or not this is, like, basically a stage play they're putting on and saying it's their it's an event of theirs. Like, who knows? They can throw money at this to be like, hey, make it look quote unquote native. But so putting that part's weird and kind of gross, but putting it aside, watching Eric be like, oh my God, I've never seen a palm tree before, is kind of fun.
I don't know. I like this, where they actually get a cultural experience, more than I like the, you're going to a village and giving them free things.
The school supplies for Fiji?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Where, like, I want Survivor to be doing that. I don't know that I want the contestants to be doing that.
Agreed.
They shouldn't be the goodwill ambassadors of America and CBS and Survivor.
Yeah.
Survivor should be doing good things because these people are letting you use their land. And yeah.
Yeah. So I just want to give that voice because we haven't in a little while. And in China, they did a pretty good job of it, I felt like, or at least I trusted them more to because of the Chinese government.
Sure.
Being stronger than probably the Micronesian government in terms of, like, what they can make CBS do and what they can't. But all that to say, this segment is endearing.
This segment is endearing. And I will, again, I'm just going to do what the show does and talk through it through Eric's perspective. They get beer. They get a feast. Eric keeps looking at the boobies.
It's, again, very American to be like, boobs must always be sexual.
That's the those are the most boobs I've ever seen in my whole life. None of the women were covering them.
It is. I don't remember any of the exchanges like this where that has happened, because they had to blur it all out and that would have stuck out before. I mean, yeah, very American.
I mean, it's funny from the Eric perspective,
because
we saw the same thing back at the waterfall shower thing.
Yeah.
So like, Eric just likes boobs.
Eric's like, never seen boobs before in my life.
I mean, I get it. Boobs are great, but like, man,
sure.
That can't be your narrative on Survivor.
You don't want the boobs are good arc. And we do get a little bit too of, like, I guess the good way you frame this, of Eric being like, they laughed at me when I did stupid stuff and I said stupid stuff. And it's like, you know, and like one of the kids like looking at him like he's an idiot while he's like trying to like practice with the stick. That's very funny.
The tribal sword fight dance is really cool.
Yeah, it was.
I liked that and I wanted to see more of that. And I just thought it was so fascinating. And I love that they let Eric and people try it.
Yeah.
Like tried to teach them. That's great.
And then Eric decides to beetle nut Max.
Yeah. Some guy comes up and he's like, hey, want this beetle nut? And he's like, you okay, sure. It's
when
like,
in Yap.
Yeah, it's tobacco-ish and it relaxed me a lot. So it was pretty good. Maybe it relaxed me a little too much.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then he throws everything up at night because, yeah, you're doing tobacco for the first time. You're going to throw up.
Well, especially, like, I don't know. I'm curious as to what it actually is. I might look it up here real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's not, like, you're not supposed to swallow tobacco. So it can't be truly tobacco.
Well, he didn't necessarily swallow this. The instructions of what we saw, he bit down on it, chewed on it, and then I didn't ever see him swallow.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
While you're looking that up, have you ever like done a tobacco product, like chewing tobacco?
Yeah, when I was like 15, I did chewing tobacco with a buddy of mine a few times.
Oh, okay.
And
did you throw up?
Not the first couple of times, and then I did. We were in his hot tub, and we'd like been playing Halo 3 or whatever, and we were like, "Hey, let's go do chewing tobacco in the hot tub." And the heat and the chewing tobacco made me sick, and I was like, "Cool, I never want to do that again."
Yay.
Okay, yeah, he was correct, or someone told him, and you know, says betel nut chewing is addictive due to the presence of stimulant aracholine and causes adverse health effects, mainly oral and esophageal cancers.
Cool.
When chewed with additional tobacco in its preparation, there's even higher risk. Okay, with tobacco, let's talk about health effects now. But yeah, okay, it does get you. It is like a tobacco-like effect. It looks like interesting.
Interesting.
Part of me was wondering if it was something that was a little stronger than that, if it was like a THC kind of thing, but Survivor's not going to let people go on there and be like, I did drugs, yo!
But they were drugs that were approved by a tribe outside of America.
Yeah, right?
Okay, anyway, he gets high, he has a great time, he throws everything up, and then he's like, I gotta go find more food, because I threw everything up. But I don't regret anything. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Good for him. Have a great time. Don't do drugs, kids.
Well, do it at your own discretion. Do them safely.
Okay.
There's plenty that are legal now.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Depending on where you live.
Do safe drugs.
Yeah. Be safe. Always be safe.
Be safe. Do crime.
Be gay. Do crimes. Be gay. Do safe.
Anyway. We flip over to Exile, and it's just a rough night for Suri.
Poor Suri, man. Although I will say, the star power Suri has to still get Exile footage while a storm is coming through. Remember when Tracy and Jason went to Exile in a storm, and we never even saw them the whole 2 days?
And we just don't even care. It's fine.
We didn't even talk about it.
Suri gets her moment. Like, this is rain. It's thunder, it's not a good night, and there's nothing to gain here because the idol is gone, and Ozzy has it. Everyone knows Ozzy has it. Maybe I'll just have to work on getting rid of Ozzy. Did this fuel her fire? Did she just sit here and think, I gotta get rid of Ozzy now?
Yeah, I think it didn't hurt. I think having to stew there for 2 days didn't hurt.
So back at camp, James is a whacking sticks in the morning.
Whose side are you on here?
What?
Whose side are you on in this fight?
What? Okay.
Well, explain the fight first. Yeah. Sorry.
So James is, he wakes up, everyone else is sleeping, and he starts whacking things together, making a lot of noise, and everyone else is sleeping. Parv calls him out, and he does not like being called out by Parv, and he talks about how he maintained the fire all night to keep the mosquitoes off their asses. It's a matter of time before I cuss somebody out. Parv, her chirp from the bed is like, there are three people here trying to sleep. It's kind of obnoxious that you're making these loud noises. So.
Whose side are you on, Steven?
I'm on Parv's side.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought the other way.
No.
It kind of depends on when it is, too.
Like,
if it's 11 a.m., I'm on James's side. If it's 6 a.m., I'm on Parv's side.
That's a good point. We don't really get that perspective. It looked early enough that James could have gone somewhere else.
Well, but that's the thing. It's still downpouring. So part of me is like, he's doing it right there because this is the only dry place to do this and you need firewood.
Oh, you might have me there.
And this is not a good look for Parv. And then James goes and gives a confession in the storm so that they can sleep.
Okay, yeah.
Poor James, man.
You might have won me over on this one. But, like, people are not themselves when they just wake up and no. When they are woken up.
Well, and, like, it's loud.
Yeah.
James is ripping trees apart.
He is not being subtle about this even slightly. It's whack, whack, whack,
whack.
And you get
the feeling like maybe he's being a little louder than he needs to be. So there's also that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, it's another narrative point of a little bit of division between James and Parv. The lover's alliance did not last.
It did not last. So we get the people from the reward back at camp. And Ozzy is just telling everybody about the food. And we love this narrative in Survivor, right? Someone just talks too much about the reward that they have.
I mean, I wrote down here, like, Ozzy or hubris is showing again.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been, like, how many episodes in a row have we had of people being like, Ozzy's way too arrogant?
He feels untouchable right now.
And that, boy, that's a really bad flaw to have in Survivor.
Uh-huh.
That's a really bad one to have.
It's tough because you want to feel confident in what you have going.
But you don't want to feel arrogant.
You don't want to feel arrogant. But also on the flip side, you don't want to feel paranoid where the people who you have deals with can't trust you.
Yeah.
Finding somewhere in the middle is a fine line to walk.
It feels like somewhere between Cook Islands and Micronesia, Ozzy really fell in love with Ozzy. Like, Ozzy's always liked Ozzy, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And he was a fuckboy through a lot of Cook Islands that I did not like in, like, the first half. I really like Ozzy,
mm-hmm.
but Ozzy clearly got very famous off Cook Islands and is very, as his ego has grown three sizes.
It grew three sizes that day.
And is bleeding into the game really badly, and it gets him voted off way before he should be voted off.
Yeah. And Parv calls him a little brat.
And it's fair. It's kind, I mean, listen, game recognized game, Parv. You're also kind of a brat. Like, sometimes, let's be real. But she's right.
Yeah. And James and Amanda are concerned that Parv is getting a little too close to those other girls.
Why could that be?
Could be dangerous. And then Jason just reiterates that I have to beat Ozzy in this immunity challenge. It's life or death.
Oh, no. I just realized.
We have to talk about that?
Jason is the most important person in this game now.
What makes you say that?
Because you have an alliance of Parv, Alexis, Natalie, Suri as four.
Mm-hmm.
And there's eight people left. So if James, Amanda, and who am I missing? Eric.
Oh, yeah.
If James, Amanda, and Eric stick together and pull Jason, we have a 4-4. And if it's an all-women's alliance that Amanda doesn't want to be a part of, then Jason might stick with the guys and Amanda. Although I could see Amanda flipping. I could see Jason just taking the path of least resistance, but I don't like how close we are to Jason being the most important person that the game hinges on. How did we get here?
Could Jason win Survivor?
No.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a jury of it. There's at least two people that the jury gets to vote on.
Right.
So no. If somehow he... Listen, okay, you know what? There's one scenario in which Jason wins Survivor. He's on that beach with Aris, and the glass punctured Aris's kidney, and he was in the hospital for several months. And they went, I guess Jason wins by default.
Well, I guess Jason wins. Anyway, immunity challenge. We have an old favorite. We are standing on a log. We have a hand overhead attached to a bucket. If your hand falls, the bucket drops. You're wet, you're out.
Old reliable.
Old faithful.
Old faithful. We've been doing this challenge since season 3.
It's pretty good.
It's a good challenge. It's simple, but it does the job.
Yep. And 20 minutes in, Jeff's already offering food deals.
Also, I came around to your point of view. I don't think the immunity dial is that good or the immunity necklace is that good.
Yeah.
It's kitschy. I do like it. It does look like something that you'd get at a gift shop at a small Michigan town off of like Lake Huron.
At a Margaritaville.
Yeah, or at a Margaritaville.
Yeah.
Mine was way more specific.
It was very
Mine
specific.
Was for two people.
I'm sorry. Do you have an experience with a kitschy town in...
I do. Lexington, Michigan is a very lovely lake town.
Why would they have tiki head necklaces?
Not tiki head, like seashell more.
Okay.
But I think maybe a little bit of tiki head too.
There it's were like, a couple tiki heads.
It's just general beach vibes.
General beach.
General beach. Served with him in Korea. Anyway, challenge.
20 minutes in, Jeff's offering a big jar of candy to get people. Suri and Eric take it.
So we're starting with candy?
Yeah.
Okay, please continue before I say something else.
No, go ahead. I want to hear your opinion on candy.
No, well, you want to hear the diabetic's opinion on candy?
Yeah.
I can see why it'd be tempting. It's not a great substance reward, but that's logic brain and not monkey brain talking. But by the time we get to the end of this, it feels like he just grabbed whatever was laying around production camp.
I think there was a lot that was not shown because I want to talk about that in a moment. James is really funny here. He says, what the Nickelodeon is going on here?
Because the water's colored.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So he's talking about like slime, like a slime bucket. They pull it over and it's like whatever their color is, that's the dye that's in the water. So he's like, what the Nickelodeon is going on here?
I thought he was talking about the candy, but that makes fun. That makes it more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then he says, I must go to my happy place. He's just really funny in this challenge for whatever reason.
James is always funny when he gets to have one-liners.
Yeah. 45
short scenes. Short scenes with James are the best.
45 minutes in, Jeff is about to bring out another tray of something. And, all right, I want your opinion on this one. Because Jeff had not announced his thing yet, but Alexis is like, done. And like, pulls her cord. And Jeff's like, I didn't say anything yet.
I think that he is technically correct. Like,
the worst kind of correct.
In this case, the worst kind of correct. She didn't say... done and stepped out.
No, she just pulled.
She just lost focus. But I think you just give it to her anyway. Like, you were offering up the food. Like, come on, man. You don't need to be a dick about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's technically correct, but he's an asshole. And she reacts like he's an asshole. And he says, yep, you can pout about it, but I'm still right, basically. He said something along those lines. Or you can piss and moan. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Jeff, what the hell?
Yeah. This whole sequence is really funny, though.
It is really funny.
Because Alexis gets out, is pissed. Natalie also does the same thing. And then James criticizing, like, that would suck. Oh, shit.
Did you say, oh, shit? I thought I said, oh, bitch.
That's exactly right. Oh, bitch. And then the water falls on him. So
this cast, even the fan side besides Jason, is just dripping with charisma.
Of those three, all three of them technically could have been eligible for the milk and cookie that Jeff was offering.
Yeah.
None of them get it.
I think that's why I knew this season would be really good right away. Besides the fact that just I knew there's names on here that I recognize. They're all just dripping with so much charisma.
They got the riz.
They got that riz, dog.
1 hour in, we are offering three donuts. And Ozzy takes it.
More Ozzy hubris.
More Ozzy hubris. And I want to point out that he takes the donuts here. Mm-hmm. I want that to be noted for later.
Okay.
Because we talk about donuts again.
Oh, yeah.
We then wait for a long time. 5 hours in.
Well, I do want to point out that it starts storming really hard. And I always struggle when there's a challenge like this with this much rain. Mm-hmm. Where I'm like, at what point does it just overflow the bucket and ruin the challenge? I mean, maybe they only have it like half full, but then it wouldn't tip so easily.
No, I feel like they figured this out. Because what you do in that scenario is you have a overflow spout on the back.
Oh, that's so simple. You're so right. That's so simple.
Where all it has to be is just like a slight dip.
Like a bathtub.
Yeah.
Like it can get really, really full, but like once it hits a certain level, it'll start draining out the back. Oh my God, that's so simple. Yeah, you're right. Great. We can move on.
I did it. I solved Survivor.
Jesus Christ. I'm not an engineer.
5 hours in, Amanda is done. She has to pee. That's it. She's like, I gotta pee. I gotta go. So she pulls her cord and sprints into the jungle.
And now we ask the hard question, Steven.
Uh-huh.
Would you piss your pants to win immunity?
Yes.
I think so, too.
100%.
Especially when it's raining.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's going to know.
Who's going to know?
No, but they're never going to know.
Survivor's going to know.
Well, they're never going to know, especially because at the end, when you get down, even when you win, you're still going to get dunked on.
That's a good point.
You're going to get clean off of it.
Unless you announce it.
Listen, those clothes are way dirtier than piss.
That's true. I'd just pee. Whatever.
Yeah, why not?
Don't shit yourself, please. But pee, fair game.
Although, maybe she did have to shit.
That could be.
Because, like, what, do you think she's going to announce to the world that she has to shit her pants? Probably not. She's going to say pee.
So then we get to 6 hours, and it's just Parv and Jason. Wow. 6 hours of a challenge.
Yeah,
six
Parv ain't fucking around.
No.
Because they're really... I mean... There's no reason that she has to win this. Like, she's not in any danger. You're always in danger, Survivor. You always want to win immunity.
Mm-hmm.
But she has something to prove here.
She does. And I think she just wants not Jason to... She wants to be in control a little bit of this vote.
Parv wants to be in control? Never.
Because I think initially in her brain, it's, I have to be Jason because Jason has to go home.
Yeah.
And then when she thinks about it more, it's, oh... I can do something with this.
Yeah, but Jason has to be vulnerable in order to do something.
Speaking of that, at 6 hours, Jeff comes out with everything from the pantry. I have cookies, donuts, a jar of candy, milk, 2 beers, and a pizza.
This just feels like leftovers from the production camp.
This is literally production saying, we're done with this challenge. Please, someone get down. We'll share it with everyone. I don't care.
Yeah. I like, what's the next option? We give them both immunity? How much longer do you think they could have gone?
Apparently not much longer. Parv said I was really hurting. And as soon as she brings her arm down, she's like, ah, I can't do it.
Now, I will continue to dunk on Jason here.
Uh-huh.
As they go, Jason, step down. Give everyone food. We won't vote for you. Which, in Jason's position, not a terrible deal to be... Only if you don't think you can win. And actually, uh-huh. I think Jason could win. I think he would have won if it would have just played out. So that part of it's kind of dumb. I don't hate his overall strategy, even though he's an idiot and it doesn't work for him because he seems to be unlikable by every possible factor. But there's another argument you can make. Hey, Parv, why don't you step down?
Mm-hmm.
He never suggests it. He never goes, well... Parv, you take the deal. Put it on her.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Why are you just giving in to their side of the argument?
And like we talk about later, I think it's at Tribal, where he's like, I'm not going to win them all. I got to start making friends in this game. One way or another.
That just sucks because nobody likes you. That's not a path forward for you.
Yeah. So here's an opportunity. You want to make some bridges? Here we go.
You're Terry without any charisma.
So then he asks everyone, hey, will everyone agree to not vote for me? And everyone's like, I guess some fingers were crossed behind their back.
That's some bullshit.
That is some bullshit.
The fingers behind the back is bullshit.
I don't like that.
God, these deals like this and the car deal in Fiji and stuff, like these types of impromptu deals are so hard for me because I want people to make them in Survivor because I think that it is interesting ways to play the game. But it doesn't blow up in his face here, but it gets really close to it.
It almost does.
And it seems
it's to a just single vote away.
It seems like most of the time it blows up in people's faces.
Yeah.
And so that kind of takes away like the fun of deal making in some ways.
We can't get Howie Mandel out here. No.
And I don't like the solution would be for Survivor to codify those things and say like you guys have to adhere to the deal, but I don't want that solution. Mm-hmm. So it's left in this area where it's you just kind of shouldn't make them.
Survivor loves that shit though.
I know.
Oh, you're going to renege on a deal? Oh, let me get 12 cameras pointed at you right now.
I know, and it's tough because if the whole tribe goes back on it, then well, who's Jason going to hold that against?
Mm-hmm. Nobody.
You can't.
For the record, I was trying to make a let's make a deal reference.
Yeah.
But I made a deal or no deal reference, and it still stands.
Yeah.
Deal or no deal. But I'm like, huh. I just want everyone to know where my brain was at here. That's it.
I went right to deal or no deal, and I was with you.
Okay. So Jason does go down. And he says, this could be my biggest mistake in Survivor. Technically correct. And so then we just dog on him back at camp.
Well, yeah, Ozzy says something like, he fell for the oldest trick in the book. And uh-huh. I'm like, just lying to someone's face isn't a trick. like you can say that he shouldn't have taken it and that he's dumb for taking it, but it's not a trick. Just saying you're going to do one thing and doing the other, there's no trickery involved.
That's just lying.
It's just lying.
Yeah. 6 hours up there made him delirious.
Yeah.
I would too.
Sure did.
James said, dude just wanted a friend. Damn fool. That's harsh.
I mean, that's let's couple that with James when he writes down his name.
Uh-huh.
He says, I thought I was the dumbest player in Survivor history.
Oof.
Talking about like getting voted off in China with two idols in his pocket.
Oof.
It's pretty funny.
And then Ozzy saying, it's outwit, outplay, outlast. He just got outwitted.
Do you think... Okay, and again, just lying to someone's face isn't, in this case, isn't outwitting them. That's just making a deal and not holding to it. Like, it's not even like a final three deal or something like that. Like, it is a transactional one-day deal that you're just saying, actually, never mind. That's not wit. It's just deceit.
I agree.
Which has its place in the game, but yeah. Don't try to make it something it's not. Do you think James would rather spend, like, a three-day romantic getaway with Jason or Jean Robert?
I think there's no winning. I would probably say Jason.
I think Jean Robert.
Okay.
I think he'd have more fun making fun of Jean Robert. I think he just thinks Jason is not worth his time.
Someone DM James this question. Let me know.
James, a full 17 years later, we have a very important question for you.
Oh, okay. Anyway, then Cerise says, hey, so this is a prime opportunity. Why don't we get rid of Ozzy? He has never felt more confident in a vote at this point. So
I mean, he literally stepped down for food.
Yeah. But we can't tell Amanda, James, or Eric. They get one whiff of this, where the jig is up.
Cerise is the queen of blindsides.
It's pretty good.
She's really fucking good, man. Uh-huh.
And Parv says, I haven't been here miserable feeling, specifically, I don't want to go up in a final against Ozzy because I will lose against Ozzy. And I have not been here miserable to lose.
We shouldn't forget that Ozzy's final tribal in Cook Islands was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he got really, really close to beating Yule while he had no business getting that close to beating Yule.
Yeah. Yep.
And Parv would remember that better than anybody else.
And we get everyone together, Alexis and Parv and Natalie kind of talk about it a little bit. And they do this right because they don't ever talk to Jason directly. Parv doesn't talk to Jason directly. Mm-hmm. And Natalie and Alexis are the ones that go and rope him in. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
They
cover their tracks so well. And when Amanda comes up to them and is talking, they're just like, yeah, we're going on Jason, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we're just shooting the shit.
Yep.
Just talking about Jason.
Beautiful. And then Ozzy and James, right before Tribal, they say it one more time. I'm worried about Parv and girl power. But Ozzy says, I'm confident about my alliance. but I might end up playing my idol tonight just to be safe.
And James knows a lot about why you should play idols when you have a bad vibe.
Yep.
And Ozzy doesn't seem to listen to him if James advises that. He talks to us about it. I guess we don't know if he talks to Ozzy about it. I suspect he probably does.
I think he did a little bit in that episode.
I think there might be a little bit of pride in this. Because if you're Ozzy, how dumb do you look if you step down from a challenge for donuts and then have to play your idol to keep yourself safe?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather... I mean, he doesn't want to go out at all, but... Like, how dumb do you look if you step down for donuts, play your idol, and you weren't even the target?
It's bad.
That's a really bad look. And Ozzy is nothing if not prideful.
But I'd rather look bad than go home, so.
Correct. Yeah, we haven't seen anybody play their idol too early yet.
We will.
I'm sure, eventually, because people are going to catch on that, I might be in danger, let's just do it now. And I'd rather play my idol too early than too late.
There is a particular season that is notorious for... having an idol in the pocket and not playing it.
Is it China?
Well, yes, that is. That's two in the pocket.
Two in the pocket's worth one in the bush.
I'm moving on.
Okay.
Anyway, tribal council, and Suri talks about why even bother looking for the idol. We all know who has it. Ozzy has it. It's a done deal. And Jeff is weird about this.
He's like, weirdly coy.
Yeah. It's like, so you think he does have it? Like, that's just a done deal.
It's just an open secret?
Yes, like, Jeff. He admitted it last tribal.
Yeah, at last tribal, he says he put the fake idol there, which means that he got the real idol. Why else would he have made a fake idol?
Mm-hmm. Jason talks about what we said before, that he can't win them all. So I got to hope these people stick to their word on this one. And James... says, just because you got on everyone's nerves doesn't mean a damn donut is going to appease it. Interesting he chose donut, because Ozzy is the one who steps down for his own donut.
Yeah, James votes for Jason.
Yeah.
But he kind of foretells Ozzy's going home, because Ozzy's also been getting on people's nerves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
More as like a, oh, he's egotistical and will win the game way, instead of he sucks as a person, but still.
Yeah. And then Parv talks about the deal. It was a crazy deal. It's a huge risk that he took. That sucks. Once again, just trying to like not tip the hand.
She does a really good job of it, too.
Yeah. And then we vote. And I like how this was stacked. The votes were stacked on this
one.
Uh-huh. Because it was two for Jason, one for Ozzy, and then we run the table two more
for Jason.
For Jason, and then boom, all the rest for Ozzy.
It's a good blindside.
That's a good vote stack.
And like I said at the beginning of the episode, it is a little understated. We don't go into tribal with a lot of like, what, like, who would be the swing vote on this? I guess Parv?
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. So like, we don't get a lot of Parv being like, oh no, what am I going to do? I don't know. We get a lot of like, oh, this plan, maybe this plan. And like, I feel like in previous ways we've seen this happen, this is the fake out. And they've used that fake out so many times, like, oh, this could be the plan. Ah, the easy vote's Jason. We'll just get rid of him. And now they've gone back and like, haha, we faked you out that so many times. Now we can use it to get an actual blindside in.
This one had a lot of variables because like Parv was technically the swing vote because they don't show her vote. And she's like, I don't know. This could be good. This could be bad. It could be a whiff of does he see this coming and play the idol? Does he, doesn't he? Do we just, like, dunk Jason into the center of the earth? There's a lot that could go on in this vote.
Which, I mean, thinking about when you take all the game, like, the people and everything else out of it and just look at the numbers, this makes so much fucking sense for Parv, Suri, and the other three girls. Because what's the downside? The idol gets flushed out and Jason goes home? Who cares?
Not even slightly downside.
The worst case scenario is the thing that would happen if you just voted the other way.
And I guess to expand upon that, then Ozzy, James...
You're in the minority at that point. Yeah.
Things are not looking great, but then it's a 4-4 minority.
Yeah.
Like, you still have a chance.
And you might be able to pull Amanda.
And Parv can apologize and go back. So, like, what do you do?
Seduce James.
Why not? So anyway, yeah. Ozzy's out on a 5-4 line. He's pissed.
Oh, he's so mad?
He's so mad.
Well, this is the first time Ozzy's ever been voted out.
That's true.
And he does not take it well.
No.
Which we got a little bit of like piss boy Ozzy from that we haven't seen since the beginning of Cook Islands.
Yeah. How do you think he does in Future Survivor?
I mean, he's good, man. He's one of, if not the best challenge beast that we've seen in the show's history. It's kind of unfortunate that he didn't win the first immunity for him, that he didn't win the first one and then gave up on the second one because he thought he was so safe. His biggest flaw is the reason he goes home, which is his hubris and something that can be learned from in a future season. His threat will always be a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Cook Islands, those were very unique circumstances where his threat, like even they talked about through Cook Islands, like maybe we got to get rid of him. Maybe we got to get rid of him. And he won the immunities that got him to final three. But I think that with his intense loyalty and his, how good he is at challenges and his social game's not bad. I think he's usually a top four, top five. He has to win immunities to get to the final because he wins most of the time he gets to the final, but that's his range. Like, five to a winner most of the time that he plays, as long as he doesn't make himself a god and think he's invulnerable.
All right. Well, he is coming back again.
Of course he is.
But not for a while. This is an interesting one because you're like, you can slot him into a bunch of different areas here, like different seasons. He comes back in South Pacific, which we have not talked about yet. This is season 23. They pick two former castaways to join, like one on each tribe.
He is like captains.
Kinda.
Hmm.
So he is one of them, and we have not met the other one yet.
What's the theme of the season?
South Pacific.
It doesn't have a theme or a specific location.
No, it just says
doing Rodgers and Hammerstein South Pacific.
The filming location is Samoa.
Okay.
Upolu, Samoa.
Interesting. Okay. It's not that long, though. I mean, seven seasons, that's like 4 years.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. The twists that they use are kind of the big, how they go forward with this.
Got it. Okay.
But not even really.
All the qualifiers you're having to put on this makes me think that season's going to suck.
Neither one of the twists are like, none of the twists are new twists.
Okay.
We'll put it that way. New twist at the time. We haven't seen one of them yet. Anyway, That's a lot of qualifiers.
Yeah.
Your protagonist of the
episode. We'll get there. That's seven seasons. That's a lock and change in Survivor in seven seasons. Seven seasons ago from this, we were on Vanuatu.
Yeah.
So a lot can change.
Uh-huh.
Protagonist of the episode, I think it's Parv. Yeah. I mean, you can make an argument for Parv, Ozzy, or Suri.
Or Jason.
No.
I won't.
No. Eric gets his own little protagonist section, but that's a beach episode, you know? But yeah, I think it's Parv. We're seeing the game through Parv's eyes. Parv is running the game right now.
Mm.
And also, I don't think people realize that Parv is running the game. I think they might find out next episode. I think they might have found out at this vote.
Nice.
We'll see how that goes for her.
All right.
She's good.
She's good. Anything else to end the episode?
I love this season, man. I love Survivor.
I do too.
Man, can you imagine if I didn't like Survivor and we were doing this?
I don't think we would be doing this, Jared. Let's be real.
I'm a man of commitment and conviction, Steven.
Nice. Me too. I'm married.
That's true. To me.
That's not true. Bumper.
We just have to start the rumors, you know?
No. That is it for this episode of the Survivor Turnback Time podcast. Jared, what would you like to promote?
It's funny off that last bit. I want to promote Steven.
Oh, okay.
I'm not probably always the easiest person to spend this many days in a row with. And Steven, you also have a lot of other difficult things in your life. So your infinite patience and your friendship means a lot to me. And I love you.
Aw.
Yeah.
Really nice. It works out actually perfectly with what I was going to promote too.
What are you going to promote?
I'm going to promote.
No.
Also Steven.
Yeah. There we go.
If you want to hire me to MC your events, reach out to me.
We didn't plan that.
No, I was honestly just running a bit. I wanted to set it up like I was promoting you. But also, Jared, you're kind of a cool guy.
Nah, so fuck off.
I want to throw that in there too. Okay, well, shit.
No, I'm kidding. Keep going.
Okay. Well, I mean, honestly, I'm impressed at your creativity sometimes. To run D&D, to run a theater, to your opinions, while often wrong and
very often wrong,
are interesting and make this show a fun time.
Thank you.
For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
My host Steven, this is Jared.
For my Steven, this is Steven.
For my Jared, this is Steven.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was fucking weird.